Welcome to our morning Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee. Ms. Hannon, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athus?
Here.
Trustee John Butler?
I'm here.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Here.
Trustee Aiden Shields?
Here.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz?
Here.
Board Chair Dennis Farsima?
Here.
Committee Chair Robert Pritchard?
Here. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum and that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. You do have a quorum of trustees present. An appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Thank you. First, Trustee Dennis Farsima and Trustee Aiden Shields, please complete the swearing-in ceremony for Trustee Aiden Shields.
Thank you, Chair Pritchard. It is my pleasure to welcome Aiden Shields to the Board of Trustees as the student trustee representative for the coming fiscal year. And at this point in time, we will ask Trustee Shields to take the trustee oath of office. So Aiden, if you are ready, I am ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. So raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Aiden Shields.
I, Aiden Shields.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully serve and support.
That I will faithfully serve and support.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States and the laws thereof.
The Constitution of the United States and the laws thereof.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois and the laws thereof.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois and the laws thereof.
And the Constitution, bylaws, and policies.
And the Constitution, bylaws, and policies.
Of Northern Illinois University.
Of Northern Illinois University.
I acknowledge the fiduciary responsibility.
I acknowledge the fiduciary responsibility.
That each member of the Board of Trustees has.
That each member of the Board of Trustees has.
And further, solemnly swear.
And further, solemnly swear.
That I will discharge faithfully my duties.
That I will discharge faithfully my duties.
As a member of the Board of Trustees.
As a member of the Board of Trustees.
Of Northern Illinois University.
Of Northern Illinois University.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
Aiden, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations. Now,
Aiden, we have this, so if you get close, I will pin this on you. We have a trusty pin, but unfortunately, I can't pin this on you via Microsoft Teams, but when we are next together, we will ensure that you have your Board of Trustees pin for you to wear with pride and honor at the trustee meetings or whenever you are representing NIU Board of Trustees at your pleasure. And at this point in time, Aiden, I would invite you to make any comments that you might have to the Board of Trustees and the public.
Yeah, I just want to say that I'm extremely excited to represent the student body of NIU on the Board of Trustees. And I'm honored that my peers elected me to this role. I could not be more pleased with this opportunity to make my mark in the history of this great university. So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. And on behalf of the Board of Trustees, we are pleased to have you as our student trustee, and we look forward to working with you over the coming year.
I look forward to working with all of you as well.
Thank you. Chair Pritchard, I would turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Chair Barsema. And again, Aiden, welcome. And we look forward to your input and contributions. You all have a copy of the meeting agenda for today. May I have a motion to approve that agenda?
So moved.
Second, Chair Montel.
Who made the first motion?
That was Chair Barsema.
Very good. We have that for the secretary. All those in favor of the motion to approve the agenda indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Motions have it, and our agenda is now set. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting from our May 14th, 2020 committee meeting?
Wazowicz, so moved.
Is there a second?
Gail seconds.
Any discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Post carried and our minutes are approved as published. I would like to welcome everyone to today's meeting and give a shout out to the students moving on to our campus this week. It's always an exciting time at NIU and breathes new life and excitement to our campus and our community. I also want to thank the faculty for preparing for a productive year ahead in these highly unusual times. You have a long tradition of inspiring our students to dream big and help them to find hope for the future, something that we all need. We certainly need hope as we survive this pandemic. Thank you too for being diligent and flexible in working to prepare for a safe and great experience for all of our students this year, whether in person or in virtual classes. We will have a presentation for Protecting the Pact, which will give more details about our preparations for this year ahead. There are no items needing approval in this agenda today, but before we go into that agenda, I would like to welcome three new members of the University Advisory Committee to our meeting. Associate Professor Katie Jakill is one of the liaisons for this committee. She is in the Department of Counseling and Higher Education. Also new to the University Advisory Committee is Professor Greg Beyer, a distinguished member of the Music Department. And Operating Staff President Natisha Johnson, who is Business Administrative Associate for University Recreation and Wellness. We are pleased that other representatives from the University Advisory Committee are also with us today. Faculty Senate President Kendall Thu, Professor Sarah Marsh, and our other liaison to Academic Affairs, Affairs and Personnel Committee, Kathy Doderlin. We welcome you all, and are there any comments you wish to make to the board?
Thank you, Bob. This is Kendall Thu. Good morning, everybody. I want to extend my congratulations to Aiden and becoming a new member of the Board of Trustees. That's terrific. I also want to thank my University Advisory Committee fellow members, particularly the new members, as Bob just indicated. Greg Beyer, if you're ever bored for a few minutes, look up Greg Beyer on YouTube. You'll see some of his masterful craftsmanship as a musician. Thank you, Katie Jakill, for agreeing to serve on the UAC. Katie played an important role last year in changing our admissions policy for undergraduates. And then also congratulations to Natasha Johnson for becoming the new president of the Operating Staff Council. I just wanted to provide a couple brief updates on what's been going on over the summer. Even though shared governance isn't in session over the summer, that doesn't mean that we haven't been busy. So following the Board of Trustees approval of the final piece of shared governance changes, we've been busily, when I say we, it's me and Pat Erickson, we've been busy implementing the shared governance changes. And as we anticipated, there are some unanticipated consequences of those changes that we're working through as it becomes real time. But those changes are being implemented, and I think we're going to be a better shared governance structure and process for it. So thank you to the board again for the final vote that you had in June. The second thing I wanted to mention is that in late spring, a group of faculty members and I crafted a letter to our to all of our returning students, indicating to them that we stand by the Black Lives Matter movement and that we were ready to take action, not just have conversations in the fall via shared governance. As a consequence of that letter going out, a number of students contacted me. I offered to have one-on-one conversations with all of them. In one case, there was a small group conversation. As a result of that, those conversations, we decided collectively that we would have a mini town hall planning forum for shared governance, which took place last Thursday. The title of that forum was Anti-Racism Planning Forum for Shared Governance. The purpose of that was to get a running start on what we can do in shared governance to address systemic racism and social injustice. That forum took place last Thursday. There is a recording of it that's available to anybody. Maybe I'll provide a link to Liz and she can share. The forum took place, it lasted about an hour and a half. I'm very pleased that President Freeman and Provost Ingram were part of that. It was primarily to listen to student voices and to listen to their recommendations for what we might do as a university. And I'm just very proud and happy to see our student leaders and student body step up and provide recommendations. We also talked about the recommendations that came out of the Black Student Town Hall meeting earlier in the year, and that was folded in. So that will be the ways in which we can address institutional racism will be a standing item on our shared governance agenda this fall, and I look forward to having those conversations and parlaying them into action. So thank you.
Are there any other comments?
Good morning. This is Kathy Doderline. I have the privilege of having the opportunity to serve supportive professional staff for another 2 years as president, and I really appreciate being given that opportunity and the opportunity to speak at these meetings. Just wanted to also echo the sentiments of welcoming Aiden Shields to the board and look forward to seeing what he's able to accomplish as our student trustee. In looking at today's agenda for the ASAP meeting, I couldn't help but notice the information provided on the voluntary incentive retirement program for faculty and staff. And I want to thank the senior administration for extending that opportunity to staff. Historically, it's primarily been an opportunity for faculty, but having it available to staff was very helpful and very appreciated. And obviously, in the report, you can see the financial impact that is had through those retirements. But also, of course, with that, you have to know that a great deal of institutional knowledge and commitment to NIU is connected to that. So I thank those people for their service, as well as for their consideration of the needs of NIU from a budgetary standpoint in making that decision to accept the voluntary incentive retirement program offer. And I also want to thank the faculty and staff as they prepare for the new semester. I know there's a lot of work that's gone into it across the entire campus. And I just wouldn't be kind of doing the right thing in terms of staff if I didn't give a special nod to our housing staff, as well as our dining staff, and also volunteers from faculty and staff that are helping so tremendously right now with the unique challenges that we face with move-in relative to COVID. So it's always an exciting time to see our Huskies coming back to campus, but it's a bit more complicated now in terms of the ways we need to do things. And I know that the staff have been doing a lot of hard work to get ready. So thank you for that. And thank you again for the time.
Thank you, Kathy. Are there other comments? Well, seeing none, let us continue on then with our agenda. Thank you for our advisory council committee comments this morning. Mr. Perry, have any members of the public registered a request to address the Board of Trustees according to state law and Board of Trustee bylaws?
Mr. Chair, we have one public comment this morning by Mr. Roderick Moyer.
Mr. Moyer, good morning. You have spoken to us before, so you know our ground rules of a 5-minute time limit. Please proceed. We look forward to your comment.
Very, very well. Good morning, NIU leadership, and good morning, Board of Trustees. It's a great day to be a Husky. And as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers said, today is a great day to arrest the killers of Breonna Taylor. My name again is Rod Moyer. Chair Barsema, hopefully fans return to professional sports very soon. And as soon as it's safe, of course, and the Chicago Cubs will welcome us back. But my comments today are titled The Life and Times of a Black NIU Social Change Leadership Student, Volume 1. And I want to note the word black. I am black. I love black. I celebrate black excellence, as I like to say. I come from a very diverse background, adopted and raised by a single white woman, my beautiful late mother, Judy. So I'm very, very diverse. Grew up going out to Vermont twice a year, spending weeks living on a mountain. So that's some of, you know, my background. But, you know, what sticks out to me and what I really, one of the things that I love and I've loved about NIU is the diversity that NIU projects, the diversity that NIU has, and the fact that people matter. The people who are in positions of leadership, such as yourself, I mean, think about it. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. Nobody has ever experienced this before. Nobody in charge has ever worked through these challenges before. It just highlights the importance of having the right people in place, good people. Mr. Kendall Thu, what an amazing mind to be open and receptive to wanting to procure information, to wanting to learn, to wanting to understand, and taking actions, not just putting out a statement, because statements are great, but taking actions because there's a real belief that something is important. And based on having that leader in place, all of these things that you've heard have happened because of that. People matter. And as a black student, I've had experiences with one former student involvement leadership director that told us that he hated students and that he didn't think large black social events should take place on NIU's campus. There was a bias that, and this is all documented. It's all documented. But, you know, think about this as a student leader. As a student, this is the director of the office that you have to work through to attempt to engage in running and operating your organization. And, you know, we had one event with D. Ray Davis, who was he's a major actor, major comedian. And Rick canceled this event 2 days before the event. 700 tickets sold. Canceled it. Didn't allow us to have it. Not because we did anything wrong, because he didn't believe large black social events should take place on NIU's campus, and he did everything he could to try to stop us. And, you know, myself, you know, we were one of the largest social event hosting organizations. But these stories, and I have a lot more, I don't have time to go into them today. These stories are some of the things that African-American and black students and black student leaders NIU have had to deal with and have had to overcome. And, you know, I have an appreciation for having to kind of go through that ringer and the experience that you get. And, you know, you got to be 15 steps ahead. You can't just be good. That's not good enough. You got to be 15 steps ahead just to play. And, you know, going through that, you know, for the greats, they're going to excel. They're going to, you know, flourish and grow. So I have an appreciation. I have an appreciation for those things. But people matter. And there's no substitution for having the right people in place. The flip side of that is it can be very, very harmful when the right people are not in place. And as we move through the day, some of my comments are going to touch upon issues that need addressing, issues that need change. And, you know, I want to be clear that NIU is great. And what I'm most proud of is the leaders that are on this call, that are here today, because I believe this body and this collective of people can make things better and take things from where they are to where they need to be. But that doesn't mean that things aren't really good. It's not a bashing. It's just, and that's what today's comments are going to be about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moyer, for those comments. And I'm certainly you're aware of the letter that our president has sent out to students, faculty, and staff on August 12th, reiterating our commitment to social justice and anti-racism. We look forward to a lot of progress this year. Let us continue with our agenda and our university's reports. At this point, I'd like to ask Executive Vice President and Provost Beth Ingram to university reports.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Pritchard and members of the board, and welcome, Aiden. We have four informational items today. Agenda item 8A is an informational item on academic changes from fiscal year 2020. The fiscal year 2020 annual listing of changes are reported and sent to the Illinois Board of Higher Education in the summer after the academic year is complete. The changes have been approved through the normal curricular processes or in accordance with the policies of the NIU Board of Trustees. The report was sent to the IBHE in June of 2020, and a complete list of all of the changes is found in your board book.
Are there any questions from board members about this report? Please continue.
All right. Agenda item 8.B is an informational item on the voluntary retirement incentive program offered to both faculty and staff in fiscal year 2020. Over the course of this program, 21 faculty and 76 staff members retired. There were 98 eligible faculty and 226 eligible staff without age reduction. The total salary was $6.06 million.
Are there any questions from the board? As has been already stated, we certainly have lost a lot of experience and knowledge to our early retirements, and we appreciate these people moving into the next chapter of their careers and lives and wish them well. Next item, please.
Agenda item 8.C is an information item.
Provost Ingram, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but Trustee Barsima actually said he had a question.
Yes, I saw that. I'm sorry.
No, that's my fault. I got in a little late. just wanted to ask you, Provost Ingram, in terms of the number of people who took us up on the early retirement program, did that meet expectations? Was that more, less? What are your thoughts on the success of the program in terms of, or I should say, the reception of the program?
So I'm going to base my comments on having been involved in programs like this at prior institutions. And the uptake here was approximately what I would have expected based on my experiences at those two institutions. So yes, it was what we had anticipated and met our expectations.
Great. Thank you very much.
Seeing no other questions, would Provost Ingram please continue?
Item 8.C is an informational item. Annually, we recognize the faculty who retired in fiscal year 20 and honor them with the designation Emeritus, beginning in fiscal 21. This year, we recognize 18 faculty from across the university for their dedicated service to their disciplines and NIU. I should note that this list is created at a point in time, so some faculty who have retired may not be recognized until next summer. Being a faculty member is a privilege, and it's also a way of life. Many of these faculty will continue to pursue their scholarship and artistry and to support NIU in a myriad of ways. I want to thank them for their past and future contributions to the Academy and to NIU. And I believe in prior years, many of these faculty might have attended the meeting and we would have recognized their contributions. So maybe we can do a little applause here for those.
Are there any comments about our newest members to the Emeriti category? Seeing none, please continue, Provost Ingram.
All right. Agenda item 8.D is meant to provide information on protecting the PAC, our plan for procedures for the upcoming semester. While I will present the information, we have several people available in the room to answer any detailed questions that you might have. So I'll wait a moment for the presentation to be pulled up. Thank you. So thank you for the opportunity to provide an overview of our plans going into the fall semester. This presentation is based on a document, Protecting the Pack, that represents the collective work of dozens of faculty, staff, and administrators. I want to especially thank marketing and communications team for putting together a document that is both clear and engaging. Today, I'm going to present an overview of our approach and then focus on teaching, learning, and scholarship. Next slide, please. Our guiding principles outline the fundamental concepts that will guide our decision-making. In this environment of uncertainty, we are not able to anticipate every question or situation. So when in doubt, we've asked our people to refer to these principles and make decisions that are consistent with these themes. And our number one theme is the health and safety of our faculty, staff, employees, and students in our DeKalb community. Next slide, please. This is the pledge being presented to our students as they return to campus. We strive to create an environment in which it's easy to follow these principles. Make hand sanitizer widely available. We've posted reminder signs. We've modeled good hygiene by always wearing a mask when appropriate ourselves, and other measures that nudge our students and our campus to take care of themselves, to take care of each other, and to take care of our community. Next slide, please. These are the expectations that pertain to everyone on campus and mimic those of the previous slide. Please note the italicized bullets. We know from our own experience, but also what we read in higher education publications and in the media, that there has been a rise in anxiety, depression, fatigue, and exhaustion. In such a time, it's important to remind ourselves that we are all in this together. We need to demonstrate patience, grace, and respect to those around us and also to ourselves, and we have to take care of each other. Next slide, please. So health and safety first, as I said a moment ago. Here are some specifics about how we are managing health and safety on campus. We've asked everyone to download the Campus Clear app. The app was available to us through a software platform that we already had, so it came at no additional cost. The app asks every user to report symptoms every morning and provides an all clear to those who are symptom free. And it reminds students and faculty and staff who have signed up for it to report their health status every day. The DeKalb County Public Health will provide appropriate contact tracing. And I would say that they have been an amazing partner through the summer and have contributed hours and hours of their time to helping us think about how to keep our campus safe. We ask everybody who has come in contact with somebody who has tested positive or is experiencing symptoms to call our COVID helpline, which interfaces with the DeKalb County Public Health. We will have on-site testing in partnership with Northwestern Medicine. And we sincerely appreciate their partnership in ensuring the health and safety of our students. We provided training, online information, and town halls to answer questions. And finally, we are collaborating with the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign on the development of their saliva-based test, which was just approved by the FDA yesterday afternoon. And that's what the SHIELD system is. Next slide, please. I now want to transition to talk a little bit about academics in specific and tell you what's going on with our teaching and learning. Currently, about 50% of our classes are solely online, about 25% are hybrid and staggered, and about 25% are face-to-face. Now, I would say that those numbers change there's still some ebb and flow in those numbers, but that's approximately where we are. The hybrid courses will have some face-to-face interactions, and the amount of interaction that they have varies by course. A staggered course is one that is meeting face-to-face, but in smaller groups of students. So a class with 60 students may meet in groups of 20 over the course of a week. All of our academic support services are available online, but also have some hours available for students who are on campus or may appreciate a face-to-face experience. Our library will be open for limited service, and we'll monitor usage and make sure that the patrons are social distancing and wearing masks. The Disability Resource Center offers mostly remote services right now, but it also has some ability to offer face-to-face services. They are actively working with students whose learning might be affected by remote teaching in particular, and making sure that we have the right accommodations to support those students that as we have switched to different kinds of modalities. Next slide, please. On the teaching side, we've created a standard syllabus statement for faculty to use about their expectations for safety in the classroom, about wearing masks, washing your hands, staying home if you are showing symptoms or if you've been diagnosed. This summer, over 400 faculty participated in boot camps to enrich their remote courses. I believe we also had a significant number of teaching assistants who also participated in those boot camps through the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning. On our classrooms, we've limited capacity to 20% of our original capacity. So a classroom that would have held 50 students last spring prior to COVID will now have a 10 student capacity. As you can tell, our building service workers have been busy spreading the desks in rooms out and making sure that the classrooms are clean and sanitized. We've created an hour of passing time between the classes so that John Heckman's crew can get in and disinfect the classrooms between each class. I want to make shout outs to some people who have, and I hate to mention specific people because you always miss somebody, but Celeste Latham, Omar Graeb, John Heckman, and the team from Do It have done amazing work this summer to get our classes rescheduled, to get our classrooms configured correctly with both technology and configurations to conform to the guidance that we know we have to follow in order to keep our faculty and our students safe. Finally, faculty have been presented with a guidance card providing language to use if a student shows up to a class without a mask. This ensures a consistent response by all faculty to the possibility that a student may have either forgotten a mask or not show up to class with the mask. Next slide, please. We have invested a significant amount of time and resources in ensuring that we have technology that will meet the needs of both our faculty and students. Teams from my office and from the Division of Information Technology have been working tirelessly to install technology in all of our classrooms. And this week has sort of been a final push to the finish. Once the technology is installed, we will have one-way streaming, two-way streaming, and video conferencing capabilities in many of our classrooms. Due to supply chain limits and frankly funding, we've been careful to assign classes to appropriate classrooms. So we've been careful to to make sure that we've got the right technology in the right rooms to help the right faculty. So we worked with faculty to find out what they needed, and we strove to ensure that the classroom they were in met those needs. We are working to ensure students have the technology and software they need through grants, a lending program, and expanding our software availability beyond campus. So the Citrix virtual desktop will make a lot of the software that was only available in computer labs on campus available to students through the internet. We found last spring that many of our students required Adobe products in order to complete their classwork. And so we've obtained a site license for Adobe Pro and a set of licenses for Creative Studio to support those students. More information about technology will be presented later today at FACFO and at the special board meeting. And so you'll get more detail about this particular initiative later in this meeting. Next slide, please. Finally, Jerry Blasey and his team have been working on guidance so that we can safely reopen our labs and begin to provide research opportunities to our undergraduate students. This is what makes us distinctive as a university. While much research can happen remotely, we know that the research programs of many of our faculty have been affected by COVID. Reasons include an inability to travel, childcare responsibilities, the switch to remote teaching, and others. For that reason, we have offered all of our non-tenured faculty a one-year extension on their tenure clocks, and we are assessing the effects of COVID on planned sabbaticals. We will, and so that is an ongoing discussion. Final slide, please. Next slide, please. So we have a lot of people on this call available to answer detailed questions that you might have about our plans. But really what I wanted to say here at the end is this effort has been ongoing. It's involved literally hundreds of people on campus and across the divisions. And what made me really proud to be at NIU this summer is that everybody rolled up their sleeves and they worked across silos. So if there's a silver lining in this effort this summer, it's that we've really created a lot of connections across different divisions and different groups on campus and people have come together to make sure that our campus is safe, that our faculty, staff, and students stay healthy, and that we can support the academic success of our students this fall. So thank you very much for the opportunity to present some of this information, and I will stop there for questions.
Thank you, Provost Ingram, and congratulations again to all those that have contributed to protecting the PAC. I would just ask one quick question first. You commented that there is a Campus Clear app. What happens if a student reports that they have symptoms?
I'm going to turn to Matt Streb for that answer because he's the one that has the best information about that app.
Sure. Trustee Pritchett, great question. So every morning, as the provost said, if you download the Campus Clear app, you get a notification and you're asked if you have symptoms. If you do have symptoms, what types of symptoms are they, or do you have no symptoms? If you say that you have symptoms, or you say that you've tested positive for COVID-19, or that you've been exposed to COVID-19, you will get an immediate response that will tell you what you need to do. In most cases, what we're asking people to do, depending on what it is to call our COVID helpline to report those symptoms and get further instruction. We're not requiring the app, but the last time I looked, we already had several thousand people who downloaded the app. It really is being used to get people into the habit, frankly, of thinking before I come to work each day, how do I feel? I can show you. I don't know if I'm on live or not, but there I have my green good to go pass, right? I feel fine this morning. And so the key thing about the Campus Clear app is getting that information out to people quickly. So when I don't feel well, I know what it is that I'm supposed to do. And that's what the app allows us to do.
Very good. Thank you. Trustee Barsema, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair Pritchard. I actually have two, one that just came up as a result of Matt's comments. So let me address that first. Did I understand you correctly, Matt, when you said that the app is not something that we're going to require people to download, or at least set the expectation that we require them to download it? And if I'm right in what I heard, why aren't we requiring it?
Yeah, great question. So, we have strongly encouraged people to require it. There will be to download it. Sorry, there will be people. There may be faculty who require students to do it to get into their classes. There may be student organizations that will require students to show that they have the all clear before they come in. We have so many different people that are not coming to campus and all that type of thing. We didn't think it was something that we needed to require. I want to be very clear about the Campus Clear app. It is one tool of many in our toolbox that could help us see if we have some issues. So that's the reason why we didn't require it. The other thing I want to say about Campus Clear too is it's not a contact tracing app. I want to be very clear about that, right? It does not have GPS capability. It does not have Bluetooth capability. We had our testing, tracing, tracking, surveillance, quarantine work group that went through and spent a lot of time talking about these various apps. David Gunkel, who was is a professor of communication, who's an expert on these apps, was on that committee. He went and did a lot of research on those apps for us. And so we thought the most important thing we need to get is people thinking, getting in the habit each morning of how do I feel? And then if they don't feel well, getting that quick information about what do I do? But it doesn't have contact tracing capability. There are some places where, Trustee Barsiem, if you and I both have the app and we hang out we're together for more than 15 minutes. If I test positive, you'll get a notification. That's not something that this app can do. And actually, we were okay with that because there's privacy concerns with that. There's concerns about creating unnecessary angst. If you're exposed on campus, you will get a human who will tell you you've been exposed and say, here's the next steps that you need to do. We thought that was a much better thing than having one of those contact tracing apps. So the key thing, strongly encouraging people to do it. We've had good response rates so far. And again, getting that information to people as quickly as possible.
Okay, great. Thank you. The question I was going to ask Dr. Ingram, so we've all read here about several campuses across the country and some major institutions who, got off to a very bad start and didn't even get through the first week of being on campus live due to off-campus parties. What are your thoughts? Before I ask this question, let me echo Chair Pritchard's comments. Thank you, to you and everybody who has put this plan together. It's extraordinarily complete and thorough and thoughtful. So thank you for that. But as we've seen at some other campuses across the country, sometimes it's the off-campus parties that can cause real issues. So what are your thoughts and what can we do relative to off-campus activities and ensuring as best we can that they adhere to the Protect the Pack rules?
So I'll make a couple of comments, and then I think President Freeman might want to weigh in because I know that this is something that she's been talking with us about practically since March. I don't think there are ways in which we are different from other universities. There are ways in which we are the same. We chose early on to have a limited number of face-to-face courses. Those face-to-face courses are mostly the ones that require some face-to-face interaction, mostly in music and in the health professions and in the labs. So we have de-densified the campus in many ways. I think that, and this is sort of a personal feeling, just having been on some other campuses, there's a real sense on this campus of taking care of each other. And I feel that as a real community sense that is something that we can build on. There's a message going out today, and I think I'll let President Freeman respond to the message that's going out today, because I know she's very passionate about this issue.
Thank you, Provost Ingram. I agree that we have some similarities and some differences from other campuses in terms of the way our students perceive the opportunity for an education and the way our community is committed to taking care of each other. But I'm also realistic about the fact that we're dealing with students and their perception of risk and their frustration with being pent up. We've mounted a very aggressive campaign to let them know what we encourage and expect in terms of physical distancing, mask wearing, coming together in small groups. It's not just posting Protecting the Pack and expecting them to read it, but there's constant redosing, students talking to students about what needs to happen on social media, in video format. And you know, we are also trying to provide safe activities that will allow our students to engage with each other in a way that's acceptable in these unprecedented times. So things that are outdoors, with masks, with physical distancing, in groups of an appropriate size. All that said, we are also telling our students in no uncertain terms in a letter that goes out today that this university has shown that we will not hesitate to pivot if circumstances indicate that things are changing rapidly, and that it's on our students to keep the university open, because if their behavior shows that we cannot operate, we will make that decision, and it's on them.
Great, thank you.
Further questions, Trustee Barsema?
No, thank you. I think you can move on to the other trustees who have questions.
Okay, Trustee Wasowitz, please.
Thank you, Trustee Pritchard. Dr. Ingram and President Freeman, this is an awesome, awesome plan. And I just want to congratulate you and everyone that's worked on this. I've looked at other plans that have been put out with universities, especially around the Midwest. And this is second to none, and it's very comprehensive. And I am just so proud for what we have put together here. I mean, of course, now we need to execute, but great job. A couple questions here on when will we have access to the saliva testing? And I know it just got approved yesterday, but is there any idea on that?
I can take that question. We are working with the team from Shield, Illinois, to get the saliva test up and running on our campus as quickly as possible. And we're also in conversations with our healthcare partner, Northwestern, about how their CLIA certified lab may provide an opportunity to help us get there as quickly as possible. Barry Bodie, who was our chair of biology, is relinquishing his chair duties to help us move this forward as quickly as possible. And we're, you know, working with the U of I to have the equipment and personnel in place. But just because of the equipment supply chain, I think that we're looking at probably 8 weeks best case scenario before we can get this up and running. We are certainly working on other opportunities for surveillance testing, both of people and of wastewater coming out of our residence halls, and we'll be making official announcements about those ongoing activities in the coming weeks.
Okay. That would be effluence, right,
Doctor? Yes.
One other thing too, as far as Campus Clear, I have downloaded the app, and I hope that we are able to meet in person one of these days, and I will have the Campus Clear app with me when that happens. So thank you, Trustee Pritchard.
Thank you. Trustee Gales.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got a couple of questions really surrounding the residence halls. And if you could kind of walk me through, you know, I picture these high rises and the kids trying to get on elevators, et cetera. Do we have policies in place as to how many people can get on an elevator? Or, you know, can you walk me through that a little bit?
We have policies in place for pretty much everything. Up staircases, down staircases, how to physically distance, when to wear masks. We've closed or reconfigured the common areas. But I'm going to actually ask Matt Streb to comment, because he was with the move-in team yesterday and can speak to his firsthand experience with parents and families as they entered residence life. Matt?
Thank you.
Yeah, Trustee Gales, great question. So the answer is yes, we do actually limit how many people can be in an elevator. It depends a little bit on the size of the elevator, but generally it's four people spread out on each corner of the elevator. As you said, and if you go into Stevenson or Grant, we're encouraging people to take the stairs, but even I'm not sure I want to walk down 12 flights of stairs, right? You know, that type of thing. But I have to just say our housing team and dining team has already been absolutely phenomenal. They're out there right now as we speak, moving our students in, and it is a much different look than a usual NIU move-in day. But I was out yesterday walking around, and students were excited. Parents were appreciative of all the stuff that we're doing to help make the students feel safe. There are hand sanitizing stations all over the place. Our CAs are well trained to talk about the types of things and expectations that we have of our students in those residence halls. I think the trustees know that we require that students provide a negative PCR COVID-19 test before we would allow them to move into our residence halls. That has worked very well for us. I think there's a lot of people who have been working very, very hard. And as the president said, we have high expectations of our students. We can put, a great plan together, but frankly, it doesn't matter if we're out there, measuring 6 feet in between each seat, if people aren't doing what they're supposed to do, right, and doing their part and making sure they're wearing those masks and making sure that they're socially distancing and things like that. Dan Pedersen, Mike Stang, Kelly Wesner, their whole team have done a wonderful job of making sure that we have an environment in our residence halls where people will still be excited, right? It's not going to be the type of thing where you're going to be lonely and isolated, but at the same time, make sure that we make the community as healthy and safe as possible.
I'm going to pivot just a little bit to the dining operations. Mm-hmm. How is that working out? And specifically too, I'm concerned about the dorms, but also we have that beautiful new home center with all the bowling alley, the Starbucks, et cetera. How is that going to play out?
Yeah, I think that either Mike or Kelly may be on the call. What I will say first, though, and I'll let them, if they're on the call, expand on this. So our residence dining hall is much different than usual, right? We are not allowing people to actually eat in our indoor dining facilities. It's a grab-and-go type setting. We do have tents set up on campus that will, again, socially distance tables apart, that will allow students to get together with their friends and eat outdoors if they want. I don't know if Mike or Kelly are on the call or even Dan Keenan, who runs our dining facilities, to go into a little bit more explanation for kind of all the things that we have in place.
Okay.
I can jump in real quickly. Matt, you did a really great job of giving an overview. Obviously, we want to be able to adhere to the guidelines that have been provided by the governor, but overall, it's about the health and safety of our students. So as Matt noted, in the residence halls, it'll be takeout. We're going to try and make sure that we have space outside in tents so students can engage. We know breaking bread and belonging on our campus, and we're going to try and do that and maintain that as best we're able under these conditions. In the home student center, we'll have our venues open, and they'll look more like the restaurant restrictions that we have across the state, and so they'll mimic those. And obviously, we'll be doing our best to package individually and to really minimize any type of risk. Again, we know that breaking bread is important, and we want to do our best to maintain those options in our community, but also encourage them to be outside and do that in a safe manner.
Trustee Gales, I'm maybe a little bit embarrassed to say this, but I've already eaten at Qdoba twice this week. And what I'll tell you, though, is that it looks very much like when you walk into a Qdoba, anywhere else, right? We've got our signs on the floor telling you where to wait in line. We've got our plexiglass to make sure that there's a distance between the workers and the customers. They've done a wonderful job of making sure that, things are planned the way that they need to be planned to help keep people safe.
Yesterday I went to a restaurant with a client, and before I could go in the door, they checked my temperature to see if I was asymptomatic and I was carrying the virus. Are we doing anything like that with our students as they attend either classes or dining halls?
Wonderful question. I'm happy to take that because that was something that my T3 SQ group that I mentioned early talked a lot about. And we have public health experts. We have members of our DeKalb County Public Health on that. We've got members of Northwestern Medicine on that. We've got our own internal public health experts. We spent some time talking about temperature checks, and the public health experts told us that they wouldn't recommend doing it for a couple reasons. First of all, fever is only one symptom of COVID-19. There's many other symptoms. Many people are asymptomatic. Fever, you know, temperature checks aren't going to catch those. The other problem is that from some of our people, they were saying that temperature checks, frankly, aren't all that accurate as well. So for those reasons, that goes back to our Campus Clear. We really thought it was folk, you know, okay, think about how you're feeling. Are you having nausea? Are you having, you know, diarrhea, runny nose, whatever the case might be, even more than just fever, because fever is one aspect of COVID, but it's not the only aspect of COVID. And what we're actually, with our public health people are actually telling us is that we're actually finding more people in many cases that don't actually have fever, but have headache and runny nose or some combination of that. So for all those reasons, we look seriously at temperature checks, but didn't think that it was worth the investment that we'd have to make from a public safety standpoint.
Thank you. That makes me feel a little bit better. Thank you.
Trustee Butler, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Thank you. I want to echo the positive sentiment that this is an excellent plan. I appreciate the collaboration that is evident here. I think my question is, I'm trying to get a better sense of the student experience in the classroom and through these other methods of learning. So can someone help me get a better sense of what face-to-face means versus a hybrid. So if I'm signing up for a class that has a face-to-face component, am I literally going for every meeting of that class into the classroom, sitting as one of the six or eight people there, And then is that class at the same time being streamed to, say, six or eight other students or 20 other students? And do I get to choose each day whether I want to watch the class instead in my residence hall versus attend the class? Or is that going to be, will I have specific days in which I'm expected to be in the classroom? I mean, can you help me understand a little bit more about how the in-person instruction and I guess the hybrid works?
Mm-hmm. So let me start with what a strictly face-to-face course is one that's meeting face-to-face with the full complement of students in a normal setting. So if it met twice a week, it would be meeting twice a week face-to-face. Only about 10% of our courses actually look like that, and they tend to be focused on courses that are skill-based. So a lot of our nursing courses, the students have to demonstrate a skill in order to move on. That skill has to be demonstrated in a face-to-face setting. The number of courses that we have like that are actually, that number is pretty small. We do have a lot of courses that are face-to-face but allow for streaming. And one of the principles that we have communicated to both faculty and students is flexibility and grace. So that if a student doesn't feel comfortable coming to class, for whatever reason, we will provide that student with the opportunity to participate in the class either remotely through a two-way streaming. It could be remotely through a one-way streaming where they can't speak in the class, but they can hear everything that's going on. Or the basic configuration is that the class is recorded and a student can listen to it later. So we have lots of different modalities for how a student might participate if they do not feel comfortable coming to class. And we've told faculty that they need to be flexible with respect to student attendance. We talked to the faculty as we install technology to ask them which technology works best for their class. So am I somebody who stands in front and lectures for an hour and demonstrates things on a blackboard, then maybe one-way streaming is fine. Is this a class where two-way interaction is very important? Then we provided two-way streaming in those classes. A hybrid class is a class that has some face-to-face component, but maybe mostly online. So that might be a course like a chemistry course where the lecture component is a remote, but there's a lab that students have to come to periodically that would be face-to-face, where again, they have to demonstrate a skill or it's something that's difficult to do remotely. About 50% of our classes, I think it's a little bit more now actually, as we've moved into the fall semester, are totally remote. And we've been spending a lot of time this summer surveying our students and thinking about how we make sure that the students have the technology they need on their end to participate in courses. So does that answer all of your questions, Trustee Butler?
I think so. I think I'm getting a better sense of how it actually will be experienced. So it's conceivable then that a faculty member could get themselves situated in DuSable Hall or something, and then no one comes that day.
Yeah, that could happen.
And then they would then provide the lecture, and it would be streamed at that point.
Right. Well, and in fact, our law school opted to be totally online this fall because of the nature of the courses and the way that they wanted to create a cohort among their students. But several of the faculty are still lecturing from one person because they wanted the technology and the sorts of things that were in the classroom. So they'll be lecturing to an empty classroom, but it will be a two-way interaction with their students.
And then likewise, it would be, in terms of flexibility, is it fair to assume that a faculty member then would also have the flexibility if at some point, say in the middle of September, they're just not comfortable anymore with this for whatever reason, they could shift to a complete online model?
Mm-hmm. So, so we've told faculty that there's a lot of flexibility. We've asked every faculty member to have a plan B. So if they feel uncomfortable coming to campus or if they're exhibiting symptoms, how are they going to communicate with their students? How are they going to pivot to a different kind of modality? And so we've asked every faculty member to think in their head, what if mid-semester I don't feel comfortable? How am I going to communicate with my students? How am I going to conduct the rest of my class? But we're leaving it really up to the departments and the faculty members to think about what those plan Bs look like.
Can I just add one thing to that?
Of course.
People ask, what would make you go back to March where everything was online? And, in the absence of the state of Illinois retreating back to a shutdown, a phase three, phase two type situation, there's a lot of latitude that we have because we know that we need to be able within a given course to accommodate a faculty member's changing preference, students changing preferences or students' illness or quarantine. Even as we look at what we might do on our own campus, there are tiers of changes we can make to classes so that we know how to preserve the classes that are critical for skills demonstration and students' progression as the last resort. But at a certain point, the state of Illinois could certainly tell us to go back to where we were in March. And because we had to build that flexibility in to the classes to the extent possible, it's provided that latitude we may need in the less extreme cases.
Mm-hmm. And I would say many of the, and you know, we're gathering information right now so that we can be in the best position to make those decisions and to provide President Freeman with the information about what's happening in our classrooms. But the one thing I would add is that many of our classes that are those skills classes happen to be in the health professions. And those students are students who have worked in health care settings for the most part. And they also, so they're more used to wearing PPE. And in many of those classes, they have more than a mask. They are in full PPE when they're in those skill building classes, because that's what they would be in the actual setting when they go out into a hospital or a clinical setting.
Can I just ask one final sort of follow-up question on the way in which the faculty determined with the help of their administrators and chairs how they would deliver their curriculum? Is it fair to say that it was, you know, based on some sort of survey, and there are certain faculty who were willing and interested in providing face-to-face curriculum, and then there were others who said, I'm just not comfortable with that, and I can manage to transition my curriculum to a complete online platform? Is that sort of how it went, or was there did a department, for example, say, look, we need to offer these classes as a hybrid class or in person? Who's going to teach them? And we need to, and these are the ones that can be online or some other format. Is there any sort of way you can help me understand sort of how did the faculty that are in the classroom, how did they end up in the classroom? Faculty that are not in the classroom, how did they end up not in the classroom?
So I would say there was a lot of variation, because class schedules and teaching assignments are done at the very local level, at the level of the department. But what I can say is that it was a collaborative discussion among the faculty members in the department. So if I take the law school as an example, they came together, they had a long afternoon discussion about what they thought was best for their students, and collaboratively they came to that decision about how they would deliver their courses. There were also, I imagine, discussions between department chairs and individual faculty. So to talk about what that faculty member would normally teach in the fall, how they were comfortable teaching it, whether it could be delivered online, what aspects of that course might have to be delivered face-to-face. And so there were times in which Chad McAvoy in my office came in to have discussions to help people have discussions about how we would deliver courses. He's the vice provost for faculty affairs. And so he was also a resource that departments and faculty could go to troubleshoot how we might offer a course. But I would say the faculty at the end of the day were allowed to choose the modality. And if there was a course that absolutely had to be face-to-face, a faculty member had the option to move into that teaching assignment.
Thank you very much for all your answers. I appreciate it. I think I have a much better understanding of how that all worked itself out.
Very good. Trustee Athas, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I want to echo everyone's comments on the plan. I'm very supportive and think it's really well done. One of the questions I had is, if there is an outbreak in an area that can be identified, a part of a dorm or a fraternity house, what is the plan for how are we going to address quarantining those students and making sure that we keep the contact tracing and everything to a limited amount of area, if possible?
I think that might be for you, Matt.
Sure, I'm happy to answer that. Great question, Trustee Athas. So we do have set aside quarantine space and isolation space. Quarantine obviously is when you are showing symptoms or may have been exposed, right? Isolation is when you've actually taken a positive test whether or not you have symptoms. So we have quarantine isolation space available on campus that our students will be moved into. We also have relationships now with two local hotels that we would be moving our students into quarantine isolation there as well if need be. One thing that NIU has made the decision to do that is a little bit different, and some of our public schools have done this as well, but a little bit different than what others might be doing, is that when you have quarantines 14 days, right? You're exposed, whatever, you're in quarantine for 14 days. If you have tested positive though, a lot of people are allowing you to come back after 10 days, as long as you haven't had fever or symptoms for 24 hours. We are requiring that it's 14 days. That was in discussion with our health department, and we thought that was in the best interest of campus to do so. So we do, again, we have some space on campus. We have some space in our community as well. And Trustee Ethed, I think there may have been a second part of that question, and I'm blanking on what it was.
No, that you answered the question, Matt. Okay. Thank you.
And I guess I would want to add, and Matt knows this, so he might not have said it explicitly, that when there is a student facing a quarantine or isolation situation, there is a chain of communication. The DeKalb County Public Health Department is immediately involved so that they can consult not only to move the contact tracing forward with all due speed, but also if a student wants to quarantine at their home residence, the DeKalb County Department of Health will weigh in on whether that is advisable given what transportation is available to the student, what zip codes the student's family residence, and what the home situation is. In that chain of communication, even if a student goes to a local hotel, housing and dining have a plan to make sure that health checks are done and food is delivered to the door of that student. And so we will have students in quarantine through the course of this semester, and it's something that we've considered and planned for to the best of our ability.
Trustee Ethed, actually, it wasn't another question I was forgetting. There was another point I wanted to make that I wanted to make sure that I made. And that is, and Provost Ingram has made the references already. Our local health department has just been an incredible partner. And one of the concerns we had, though, is a lot of health departments don't do contact tracing on the weekend. And that is an incredible problem because speed is so important here. You need to get in touch with people as quickly as possible. And so we said, look, we have real concerns about if we have somebody who's calling on a Friday night and we're not going to get any contact tracing done until Monday morning, that's a real problem for our university. And they were great, and they've hired extra contact tracers, and we will have contact tracing throughout the weekend as well. So they've been a wonderful partner with us as we've gone along, in a variety of ways. And the president's absolutely right. We have our students do have the option to go home if they want to, if it's safe for them to do so. But we are prepared for those students who can't or don't want to, or for whatever reason, we will have a place on campus or slightly off campus in a local hotel, and we will make sure that their needs are taken care of.
Okay, thank you. I'm impressed with the way you've thought that through and the steps that will be taken. So appreciate that.
Thank you. Trustee Herrero, you have a question?
I do. Thank you. So my question is similar to John or to Trustee Butler's question about student experience, but my question is more geared to the online course experience. So the online coursework, as we know, is a really great option right now, right? The best way to go in many cases. But many of our students, especially those who are new to college or those who have never taken online coursework, this might be challenging, and it's really easy to, especially for those who are new, to not ask for help when we need it, right? And to, you know, maybe even start to disengage as we start to feel, just not really confident with the material. So I'd like to know, I'm sure you all have thought through this, especially with the experience we had in the spring, but what are the mechanisms that we have in place to ensure that students are making progress, that they're engaging, and they're asking for help when they need it, specifically for the online coursework?
Mm-hmm. So I think that there are multiple things we've done, but let me talk about what we've done from the instructor perspective and then from the student perspective. From the instructor perspective, as I said earlier, we had over 400 faculty. We have about 800 faculty you know, give or take, depending on the contracts. Over half of them participated in boot camps this summer on how to do engaged remote teaching. And some of the elements of that were checking in with your students, how to make sure that the students are engaged with the material, how to check up on students. And so we've trained the majority of our faculty in good practices in remote education. And many of the faculty did those boot camps on their own time. They're not on contract in the summer, but they wanted to improve their skills in online teaching. So from our perspective, there was a lot of excitement among faculty in upskilling and in improving their skills in how to do remote teaching. From the student perspective, let me talk about something specific and then something more general. We looked at all of our students from last spring at their academic records, and we identified a set of students who seemed to have struggled in remote teaching. They ended up dropping classes or their grades were not quite what we would have hoped for them to be in the spring. And we are putting into place special academic supports for those students. We've asked their advisors to keep track of those students and to reach out to them very early in the semester. We are going to line them up with more tutoring, writing support, if they're in math classes, to line them up with supplemental instruction. And so we've identified a group of students that we think are especially at risk of struggling this fall, and we are proactively putting supports in place for them. In addition, we've asked all of our advisors to be proactive this fall in reaching out to students and having conversations. Personally, what I'm especially concerned about is the mental health of our students and levels of anxiety that they might be experiencing. And that doesn't always show up in course performance right away, but somebody reaching out personally and saying, how are you doing? How are things going? Is there anything else we can do? I think makes that bridge that enables students to say, well, you know, it's been hard, or, you know, I really like to get in touch with a counselor, or I'm really struggling with my writing. So to proactively reach out to our students who may be exhibiting symptoms of not participating or not being involved in their classes, and instead of waiting for them to reach out to us, that we will reach out to them.
So there's, like, from what it sounds like, advisors will be checking in with certain students who are, who you think based on last term's performance might need some additional help. So that's sort of like a caseload for advisors. And then if the faculty is able to enter somewhere that students are not attending class, mm-hmm. is that the other sort of flag?
So we use a system called Navigate. It's an advising platform, but it's also a referral platform. And so that gives faculty the ability to raise a flag about a student, and we have ways to follow up when that happens. So a faculty member may say, you know, this student hasn't logged into the course in 2 weeks. Can somebody check up on them? And then we have a follow-up plan on the back end. That software system is what enables us to manage cases and keep track of students.
Wonderful. Thank you. And thanks to the faculty too for dedicating, you know, some of their time over the summer to upskill and make sure that we all feel really prepared, to serve our students and help them. And, you know, I echo everyone else's comments that this is a wonderful plan, very thoughtful, and thank you all very much.
Thank you. I would ask one more question. You mentioned there was academic support. What about students that may transfer to Northern and doesn't have the kind of computer skills that they need for these virtual classes? What support is there for them?
So you were breaking up a little bit, Trustee Pritchard, but I think you were asking about students who might be transferring into Illinois and don't have either the equipment or skills that they need in order to succeed in from a technology perspective?
Correct.
So, we've been very concerned about access to technology since March, and we've actually invested a lot of the funding that we've received in providing emergency grants to students, much of which went to purchasing technology. We've also dedicated through you know generous donors have supported that emergency fund. So on the technology side, you know, it's clearly something we still need to pay attention to because we know we will have students coming to us with that have technology needs. We do have a Lead Deed program through the library, and we make that available to students, and we also try to touch base with students who advisors may have told us are struggling or who have identified themselves as struggling with their technologies. You know, we do, if a student has the technology but is needs extra help in learning how to use Teams or pretty soon Zoom, we do have a Keep Learning site through the Center for Teaching that provides modules to students that they can look at to help answer their questions. DUET has a helpline, the Division of Information Technology has a helpline where a student can call and say, I can't get my audio working, what do I do? So we do have various mechanisms for self-help for students on the Keep Learning site, but also actual help if they can't resolve the issues on their own through the Division of Information Technology.
Very good, thank you. Trustee Wasowicz, you have another question?
Yeah, I just have a question and then a follow-up comment. So, I mean, people are going to get infected. It's just a reality. So will we have a dashboard on how many students are infected? And
that one's for you, Matt.
Wow, Trustee Wasowicz, what a great question. We will, and it will be up momentarily. So yes, we will have a dashboard. It will, you know, there's a variety of different things that people talk about in dashboards. What we will be able to show is that each day, how many positive cases of students and employees do we have, the cumulative number of cases. One thing that we're doing that's a little bit different too from other places is we're talking about the number of recoveries. So when a student goes through isolation and now they're back on campus, right, we'll talk about, you know, we had three people that were released back today. We are going to limit it only though to people. Getting these numbers is very difficult because there's a lot of variables that go in here, right? And so we are only limiting the reporting to people who are on campus. And so if we have a student who lives in Naperville, who never comes to campus, is all online, right, and tests positive for COVID-19, we won't be reporting that publicly. So it's only people or employees, students or employees, who will be on the NIU campus. We will also, to go back to Trustee Athes's question, we'll have a metric there that will show you the capacity of quarantine and isolation availability that we have still. So we'll have that as well. And when we get into surveillance testing, we'll be also posting our surveillance testing results to let people know we had, you know, seven cases or whatever as a result of that. So yeah, that should be up. I know that our web team is working on that very hard right now, but we should have that up by the end of the day today.
That's awesome. I mean, it's part of living with the virus. We talk about, you know, protecting the pack. This is a part of a team. People want to see how we're doing and how is everything working. And I just think that is awesome that we're doing it. Thank you. My comment was to you, Matt. You were talking about how hard it was to run down 10 flights. I think it's a lot harder to run up 10 flights.
Very true. Very true. So,
well, especially if you're carrying, like, you know, a computer and a suitcase, right?
Yes. Thank you.
Provost Ingram, do you have any other comments on protecting the pack?
I think there's one question from Trustee Shields.
Okay, I don't see that, but go ahead.
Thank you. This is a follow-up to Trustee Wasowicz's question for the dashboard. Matt, you specifically said on campus we would be reporting cases and whatnot, but you said off campus and all online. Your example was somebody living in Naperville who never physically comes to campus. Would we be reporting somebody who lives in an off-campus apartment who has all online classes
Amen. Is a,
oh, on that dashboard?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. The answer to that is I should have been a little bit clear. Yes, we would, because that would be part of our DeKalb community. So that would be somebody that would be coming in, and we would get that information through our health department. So yes, we would be reporting that as well.
Awesome. Thank you.
Anything else, Dr. Ingram? Or
no, thank you so much for all of the questions and all of your support. You know, it's an interesting time to be in higher education. So
let's hope everyone's writing mementos, memoirs that they can remember. Are there other matters that need to come before this committee?
If I can just say one thing here, I'm not sure if it's going to be mentioned later, but I did want to congratulate the team on the release of the equity plan today with the Partnership for College Completion. This is amazing work, and I know how hard everyone has been working on this, and the plan is very clear, very transparent, and very self-reflective, and I just wanted to thank everyone who's been involved in that. And I'm looking forward to continuing to see how this all unfolds and the progress of the plan. So thank you. I just wanted to mention that.
Very good. Thank you. Is there a motion that we adjourn?
Awesome. So moved.
After the second.
Okay, let's have a roll call vote on adjourning our committee. Please read the roster.
Trustee Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler? Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee Aiden Shields?
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz?
Yes.
Try back in. Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Thank you. Board Chairman Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
And Committee Chair Robert Pritchard?
Yes. Our committee stands adjourned. The next committee is going to begin, in 5 minutes, or do you want to go concurrently?
I think I'll leave it up to the trustees, but I think that if you wanted a 5 or 10 minute break, we could certainly do that.
Why don't we take a 10 minute break and let's adjourn the next meeting at 10:10.
Very good.
Great.